The Book Nook on WISO is made possible by five local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Midpoint Library System, Clark County Public Library, and the Dayton Metro Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and I'd like to welcome to the program today Robin Yoakum. His new novel just came out. It's called A Brilliant Death. He joins us by telephone from Central Ohio. Hello, Robin.
Hi, Vic. Pleasure to be here.
Robin, you apparently really loved living in a small town in eastern Ohio as a youth. You seem to keep writing about it. Three novels, and they're all about troubled youths in small towns in eastern Ohio. What's up with that?
In small towns, I know. I may be in a little bit of a rut there. I grew up over around Steubenville, down in the Ohio River Valley, and I just love that area as a backdrop. The grittiness and the blue collar work ethic when I was growing up. I think it makes for a terrific backdrop. I will tell you this book was I don't want to say it was an accident, but it took some odd steps of getting published. I actually did it, started on it. Gosh, it might've been 20 years ago now. My agent happened to read it, wanted to know what I had laying around that hadn't gotten published. I gave it to her and she asked me to polish it up and give it a rewrite. And I did. And lo and behold, it's hitting the bookshelves now.
So it's actually your first novel. It just took a while.
It took a while. I had actually written an anthology about these kids growing up in a small industrial town. The editors who read it said, you need to put this into the form of a more traditional novel. Take these anthology stories and work it into a novel. And I did, and it didn't go anywhere. And I just always assumed, okay, that was one of my practice books. We'll keep moving on. And when I went to do the rewrite, all those little anthology stories just got in the way of what I thought was could be a pretty good book. So I cut 65,000 words out of the book to get down to where I am now, and put a new title on it and sent it out there.
Robin Yoakum joins us. His novel is A Brilliant Death. It's a mystery, and that title reveals the name of the locale. And isn't this the place where you grew up, Brilliant, Ohio?
Brilliant, Ohio, a little town just south of Steubenville, of maybe 1,600 people, small industrial town, but had a very strong influence, I think, on who I am today. Favorite Sons, one of the first novels, was set in Crystalton, Ohio, and it was a thinly veiled version of Brilliant. So, but this
I remember that.
Yeah,
and Brilliant had other names, but it got its name from a glass factory, right?
Correct. It used to be a big glass factory in town, Brilliant Glass, where actually my grandfather worked. He finished the fourth grade, and his father, my great-grandfather, said, that's all the education anyone needs. Let's go. And he started working in a glass factory there in town when he was 10 years old.
It's kind of a classic Rust Belt story, isn't it, in all these little towns in Ohio. In Brilliant, you had this great business, this glass factory, access to the Ohio River, to shipping. And now it's probably not even a town, is it?
No, it isn't a town anymore. They actually, unincorporated a few years back. If that stretch from Steubenville to Wheeling, when I was a kid, late 50s through the 60s and early 70s, it just boomed. I mean, there were jobs everywhere, and steel, glass, potteries, and now it's just terrible. It's really sad when you go back to see what's happened. All those little towns are just falling apart.
Let's talk about the story without doing any spoilers, because this is a mystery. But I think there's a lot that we can talk about without giving away.
I agree, sure.
So tell us, what is A Brilliant Death? How'd you get the idea? What's it about?
A Brilliant Death is I was looking for an idea, and it was actually inspired by a real story here in Columbus. A school teacher from Grandview Heights, who in 1946 walked out the door on a Saturday morning to go down, catch a bus to go downtown, and was never seen again. And I was always fascinated with that story. I mean, you know, how does someone just totally disappear? No one ever heard from her again. So I was trying to come up with an idea, and I was going to do a missing person. And when I was a kid, I was terrified of that river, the Ohio River. My grandmother used to tell me there were giant suckholes in that river, and if I ever went into it, I'd be pulled under, drowned, and my body would never be found. My parents wouldn't even have a body to give me a decent funeral. And, you know, they would tell you these horrifying stories in hopes of scaring you enough to keep you away from the river, the railroad tracks, the sand quarry, whatever it was. So I took those two elements and created a character named Amanda Barron. And Amanda Barron is out on a pleasure boat with her lover in 1953 when the boat drifts into the path of a barge and is destroyed. But no bodies are ever found. She kind of becomes the Amelia Earhart of this little town. And her son is, Travis, is an infant at the time. And when he's 15, he recruits his buddy, Mitch Malone, to help him just kind of find out what his mother was like. He doesn't know anything about his mother. And over time, it morphs into a murder investigation.
And Travis's father is a very nice guy.
He is not a nice guy. He's not a nice guy to begin with, and he is very self-centered and doesn't really have time for Travis. And when Travis tries to ask him, you know, about his mother, you know, he refuses to talk about it. So Travis is, you know, they call him, you know, he's kind of the neighborhood kid. It's as though everyone in the neighborhood takes turns raising him, because the dad doesn't really have any time for him.
This is really the story of a friendship between these two young men, Travis and Mitch, and it's told from the vantage point of the best friend, because it's all in flashbacks pretty much until we
Correct.
Get near the end, and that's because as the book opens, Travis is dead.
Correct. So Mitch, who becomes a newspaper editor, reporter, is telling the story. And I will tell you that I originally wrote the book in third person, but felt compelled to go back because I think it's just easier for me, to having grown up in that era, having been a former newspaper reporter, I could see and tell everything through my eyes. And you know, Mitch is modeled. Travis is modeled after one of my good friends from high school, and I can see the action taking place in that little town where I grew up, and understand the relationship, that friendship between those two kids.
And we won't discuss how Travis died, but it's fairly spectacular. He's making quite a statement.
He is. And as he moves through the book, the bitterness, the resentfulness he has toward his father continues to grow. And he's looking for a way to make a statement. And I think also inflict a little pain on the father in doing so, because one of the father's most beloved possessions is destroyed in the process.
I was afraid you were going to do a spoiler there, Robert.
No. I was sitting here trying to check my words.
Okay. The book is A Brilliant Death. Robin Yoakum wrote it. He joins us on the program today. As I read it, I flash back to my own youth and my memories of the kid who lived a couple doors down, who was my best friend. We were pretty much inseparable in the mornings, in the summertime. I would just go over to their house and walk in the house. this is the same period when you were growing up, and walk in and wake my buddy up, and we go hang out in the park or have fun all day. And these two kids in your story, Travis and Mitch, they have that same kind of relationship. And Mitch is really willing to do just about anything that Travis wants him to do, much to his chagrin.
Right. I mean, at times he has to be taken kicking and screaming to some degree. But he also, in his heart of hearts, I think he enjoys it. You know, I think he likes being part of the process, and he also understands from an early age that he has advantages in life that Travis has never had. You know, good parents, regular meals, and that sort of thing. And you know, I believe that the kids love adventure. All kids, you know, and he's not. So he doesn't have to be, his arm doesn't have to be twisted too hard, even though, you know, he knows there are times when the house and they're going to go exploring that, you know, it's not good timing.
Yeah, the father, the mean daddy, is a long distance over the road truck driver. And when he comes home unexpectedly, that can certainly create some problems.
Well, it does. It does. And when he comes, I don't think that's any kind of a spoiler alert, but there is one scene where they go up into the attic to see what they can find, if there's anything up there that relates to Travis's mother. And turns out that Big Frank has left, gone to pick up a load with his truck, and it wasn't ready. So he returns home to take a nap. Well, Travis isn't supposed to have anyone home, and Mitch gets stuck up in this sweltering attic for a couple of hours while Big Frank takes a nap below him. And I think it's, you know, I tried to extract some humor into that scene. But yeah, that's one of the scenes where it comes back to bite Mitch as he's trying to help out his buddy.
And as this story develops, it really does become a murder mystery, doesn't it?
It does. It does. Because when Amanda Barron disappeared, nobody was thinking there was any foul play involved, except perhaps the boys at one point team up with a disgraced former detective who had done time in prison conjuring up evidence against suspects. So when he gets out and they go to talk to him, you know, he's got this black cloud hanging over his head, even though he believed that Amanda was murdered. So they end up, you know, it's these two teenage boys and this aging alcoholic former detective team up to unravel the mystery.
And this noir, disgraced detective, former police officer, he's really a classic of the genre because he is a really good detective, but his methods are a bit suspect.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I used to cover the police department for the Columbus Dispatch. I was a crime reporter for years. And I can't say I ever saw cops, you know, make up evidence. I didn't see that. But what I would see is cops who would determine or in their mind think they knew how a crime went down and they think they know who did it. And then they become single focused. They're focused on that particular person and what they believe to be true, and sometimes ignoring other evidence that there are other suspects that's floating around out there. And I kind of had that in mind when I was, you know, piecing them together.
Well, it's always a lot more interesting for the reader to read about crimes being solved without going by the book. I mean, there are so many crime novels where the investigators have to circumvent the rules, otherwise they're never going to solve it.
And that is the one. I don't want to call it a flaw, but when you look at a lot of crime novels, you know, my experience from covering the crime beat for years was it was never as much the intelligence or of the detectives as it was the stupidity of the perpetrators and their inability to keep their mouths shut. So, you know, I always try to write in a lot in that gray area, because it's never black and white. It's always, you know, somewhere in the middle floating around. And, you know, I think that's the way that real life is, and particularly with the cops and the bad guys.
I got a real sense of timelessness from A Brilliant Death. I felt like it was kind of a black and white TV show from the 60s because of the time that this is taking place, and because Mitch is such a gung-ho, Leave It to Beaver kind of guy. I mean, it just really seems like a flashback to a previous era, even in the writing style that you use.
And I think that's probably pretty astute on your part. And, you know, you write what you know, and you write, for me anyway, you know, I mean, I pick a location, an area of the state that I'm comfortable with, and I pick a time, because to write as a teenager or to look at life through the eyes of a teenager who's growing up in 2016, I don't understand that. But I do understand what life looked like in the 1960s and the 1970s. So, you know, I tend to want to, I guess, I gravitate toward that era as much as I gravitate toward that region of the state.
There are certain literary imprints that put out some great crime fiction. And one of them is this imprint that your book is on, 7th Street Books. I really like them. They've put out some great work over the years. I'm wondering how you got the book deal with them.
Well, as I was working after the essay came out, I was working on another book, and that's when my agent said, I had this book. This book was originally called The Baron of Brilliant. And I had two other books, the Duke of Mingo Junction and the King of Steubenville, or the Earl of Steubenville. So I had the Duke, the Baron, and the Earl. That was my tie. I had these three books. So while I was working on another novel, my agent said, you know, let's rewrite this one first, which I did. And her idea at the time was to sell it to an ebook only division, I think, of Doubleday or Random House. They have a mystery ebook only. Huh. She said they're sitting on your shelf, they're not doing anything. Let's try it. Well, but she also sent them to a couple of other publishers, and Dan Meyer, who is the editor at 7th Street, saw it and called and wanted to buy it, and did. And he's also interested in the other two. Matter of fact, the book that's currently called The Earl will be out in about a year. So I think they're going to publish all three of them.
Is this a trilogy, or are they unrelated?
They're unrelated, except that the main characters are all cousins. And I kind of explain that in the prologue of A Brilliant Death, that you know, these other two stories are coming. Johnny Earl is the main character in the next book. But they're only related in that the characters, the main characters of each book are cousins.
Well,
and there is some crossover, you know, in characters in the books, but you could pick them up independently. They're not really a true trilogy.
I see the Baron in the title of A Brilliant Death hit the cutting room floor. Does that mean that the Duke and the Earl are going to go that way,
too? Yeah, well, I can tell you for sure the Earl is. He doesn't like that one, and that's fine. You know, I'm not crazy about that one. The Duke of Mingo Junction I will probably fight for, but the other ones, as a matter of fact, when I handed in the book, it said The Baron of Brilliant, and he said, great, because you know that name, that title is not going to last, right? I said, well, I didn't know that, but, you know, let's go ahead and come up with something. And he actually came up with A Brilliant Death. I will tell you that it takes me longer to come up with a good title than it does to actually write the book. I struggle with that like you can't imagine. The one that's coming out next year, The Earl, I probably sent him 80 suggestions, and he's nuked every one of them. So I finally just passed the ball over to him. I said, here, you figure it out. tell me what the title is going to be.
Wasn't that a little depressing to spend all that time brainstorming titles and then have them just say, forget it, we're not using your title?
Well, you know what? When you've done three novels and sent those out and get rejected on all those, a title is kind of a minor. And in all candor, I know a lot of them aren't very good. Uh-huh. I know they aren't good. Now, he wants something that will let the reader or let a, you know, a potential reader know that it's suspense mystery related. And I've the one I came up with for this next book is The Resurrection of Johnny Earl that I really liked, and I like it because I think it just has some rhythm to it. But he doesn't like that one either, so we'll figure it out.
Well, unless you're James Patterson, that's probably just the way it goes.
Exactly.
He probably can say, this is the title, and they probably just, you know.
They roll over and say, fine.
Right. They put him back in his sedan chair and carry him out of the office.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. You know, and start printing more money. I don't know. I will say that I really like the cover of A Brilliant Death. I think they did a great job with it. So, you know, I'll put it back in their hands and we'll figure it out. Now, they will work with me on it. They'll give me some examples and let me kind of pick and choose. But at the end of the day, it's their decision. Right now, the essay is coming out in paperback in the fall. And we've been through five or six cover versions for the paperback. And finally, you know, the editor of the marketing department said, okay, here's what it's going to be. And, you know, it's their decision ultimately.
So you have a three-book deal with 7th Street Books.
Well, right now it's a two-book deal, but I'm pretty confident that the other one will get published also. I'm going to be in New York meeting with Dan here pretty soon, and we'll hopefully start planning that for the spring of 2018 for the third one.
Do they make these contingent on, well, your book did really well, or your book really didn't do very well?
You know, this, because the other two were published by Arcade Publishing, and this is my first lap around the track with 7th Street. But so I don't know. But their distributor is Penguin Random House, and I know they've done a terrific job so far of getting out and publicizing it. We're going to get some. I know the Toronto Star is going to review it and couple of other papers. So, you know, I'm hoping that we get, you know, some good bounce with it and see where we go. But, you know, Vic, at the end of the day, it's a business.
Right.
And if I put a couple books out there that languish and don't sell, you know, I can't imagine they're going to keep knocking on my door.
Well, getting the books into the hands of the actual people that maybe could influence some people to read it, people like me, I guess.
Sure.
That's
absolutely
important. I got Favorite Sons. I read it. I liked it. I reviewed it for the Cox, Ohio newspapers. They never sent me the essay. We went round and round, but they never sent me the book.
You know what? Let me tell you, with the essay, a week before it was to hit the shelves, I called you. Some of the other editors I know in Ohio, and none of them had seen it.
Yeah.
No one. And when I, of course, you know, the top of my head come off, and I'm on the phone with my agent, and all the review copies, every review copy was sitting in a warehouse in boxes, had never gone out. Publishers Weekly didn't get it. Kirkus didn't get it. Nobody got the essay. So,
well, sorry to bring that up, but
that's fine. Did I mention I'm not with Arcade anymore?
Yeah, you did. But and if it's any consolation, the distribution through Penguin Random House for 7th Street Books is really great, and I get their stuff that it comes like clockwork, and the contacts with your publicist were very effective and efficient. Cheryl got this thing lined up, sure. Boom, boom, boom. So,
yeah, she's a gem. She has been a gem to work with, and has gotten me several opportunities to get out and talk about the book. And I'm going to be traveling over to Eastern Ohio here pretty soon, so I'm a lot more confident with this one that we're going to do well. And, rising tide raises all boats. Mm-hmm. Hopefully this does well. And when the essay comes out in paperback, we get a little more attention for it.
Robin Yoakum joins us. His book is A Brilliant Death. And I was looking at your itinerary, and I see you've got a book signing in Brilliant. Now, where are they going to have that? Are there any buildings left in Brilliant?
Oh, yeah. Brilliant has actually, there is a big AEP, American Electric Power Plant, in Brilliant.
All right.
So actually, compared to the rest of the valley, Brilliant is still doing fairly well. But the library in town, it's the same place when I was a kid.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's much smaller now. I'm sure I went back, and but there's the community. It's in the community center, and there are some meeting rooms upstairs, and I think we'll probably go into one of the meeting rooms.
Now, is it really much smaller, or is it just your memory as a kid?
Yeah, I was just being facetious.
Oh, okay, right.
It seemed giant when I was a kid, and I walked back in. I thought, it wasn't that big at all.
Yeah.
But they have a meeting room, and Nina McKinstry, who I grew up across the street from, is one of the librarians there, and she's having me back. So it's a lot of fun to go back and see people I haven't seen for quite a while.
That's very sweet. I can just picture that. And they're going to be so thrilled to have a book by their hometown kid grown up with the name of their town right in the title.
Right in the title. And, as interesting as when Favorite Sons came out and it was set in the fictional Brilliant Crystalton, my mom, she's living out in Columbus with near me now, but at the time she was still back home. And people would stop in her on the street and they were asking about particular characters. And said, when you talk to Robin, ask him if I'm this person. They all wanted to know who the inspiration was, and they thought that they were able to plot out who was who through the book, which I thought was a lot of fun.
Well, I'll give you credit because I was wondering how you're going to wrap this thing up in A Brilliant Death and whether if there was a murder, who did it, whether they would pay for the crime, and I like the way how you kind of left some ambiguity there. I thought that was very well done.
Well, thank you. Well, and again, it's how many times at the police when I'm covering the crime beat, did the police really know who did it, but could never get enough evidence to pin it on them? There was one very high profile murder here in Columbus of a young woman, an accountant. And everyone, the cops were 99% sure the husband did it, but could never get the evidence to pin it on him.
Mm.
And I think that happens probably more than people realize out there. And there's a very gray area, and sometimes life just has to stay gray. And that's the approach I took here.
The book is A Brilliant Death. Robin Yoakum wrote it. It just came out, published by 7th Street Books, and we can expect more out of Robin. As he mentioned, he's got some other books in the drawer and another paperback coming out and lots of things in the works, so to speak, and we really appreciate your time today, Robin.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time, appreciate the interview, and I hope your listeners, I hope they enjoy the read.
Thanks. You've been listening to The Book Nook on WYSO. The book, again, is A Brilliant Death by Robin Yoakum. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis. Thanks for listening.